weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
You are most welcome to the Monday edition of Game On. Busy programme to come between now and 7 o'clock. We're going to reflect on a busy Autumn Nations series from a rugby perspective. We're going to hear from Andy Farrell and Hugo Keenan, Keane Tracy and Stephen Ferris with us to chat about that. Big night ahead tomorrow night for the Republic of Ireland women's team in their Euro 2025 qualification playoff final second leg. UEFA are doing a great job in making these matches, you know, longer and longer titles. We're going to hear from Katie McCabe and Eileen Gleeson in advance of that and reflect upon the Premier League weekend and more in the company of Alan Cawley. 51552 is our text number if you'd like to make contact with us, or you can find us across social media at GameOn2FM.
GameOn2FM.
Delighted to be joined in studio by Keane Tracy. Good evening.
Hello, Damien.
Alan Cawley, how are you?
I'm great, Damien. Yourself?
Not too bad now. Good, busy weekend. Loads to reflect upon. I was saying, Keane, beforehand, it kind of completely skipped my mind that it was straight from Autumn Nations Series straight into Europe this week. So I was thinking, sure, everyone will have a nice few days, relax, sail through a URC weekend and then start the build-up for Europe. But it's kind of out of the frying pan of intensity into a different frying pan of intensity.
Yeah, back-to-back Champions Cup games this weekend, Damien, then into Interpros, then into back-to-back Champions Cup games, and then the Six Nations. So the rugby fun never stops. I actually met a current Ireland international earlier in the local coffee shop, and even he was struggling to get his head around the fact that they're straight back into action this weekend. Normally you would have a couple of weeks of URC where the frontliners wouldn't play, but no rest for the wicked.
And I made the mistake of kind of playfully suggesting to somebody involved with the coaching team on Saturday, or like, 9 weeks today is the England game, and the look I got back was, you're not serious, are you? And the problem that you can't imagine, if we had beaten New Zealand and November took a different landscape, you'd wonder how much game time the likes of Caelan Doris and other players would have had had the momentum been different within that window. Because Leinster aside, Leinster have great depth obviously, but some of the other provincial head coaches must have been looking at the game time that certain players played, thinking, I don't need that before the potential for a European campaign to fall off the wagon before it gets going.
Yeah, I think Caelan Doris actually played every minute of all four games. I think Mac Hansen was probably the same. Guys like Josh van der Fleer started all four, Joe McCarthy as well. So you would definitely, if you were a provincial head coach, like a week or two just to get the bodies back, give them, you know, a bit of a well-earned breather. But like I said, there's no time, I suppose, to lick their wounds or anything like that, to straight back into it. And there are some tough games ahead this weekend.
But sure, Alan, if they're soccer players, they play 38 games week in, week out, Champions League on top of it, internationals on top of it. You know, they don't need all the rest and minutes that the rugby lads get.
Oh, it's rugby fellas giving out, GA fellas giving out. Us soccer players, I tell you what.
Pampered rugby players.
Yeah. That's it. Pampered, to be fair to the rugby players. Going 4 weeks, the attritional side of that. Oh, my God. I never really get the GA end, and people might give out to me now the whole 6 day turnaround and this stuff you'd often hear, but the rugby stuff I get.
But the argument there is, whether you agree with it or not, is that the rugby players, you'd imagine, were let off the leash on Saturday evening, but then they've got, you know, professional weeks to recover and sleep and all that sort of stuff, whereas the GAA lads, like, genuinely, listen, I know people look at it and can mock it, but like, how many fellas play league games or early championship games and then are in a classroom on a Monday morning or in something else on a Monday morning?
Yeah, and that's the big thing around it, because I notice even from the part-time days with the football side of it or the soccer end of it, it's the rest and recovery. It's not so much the fact that you might only be training two or three nights if you're part-time or whatever, and then playing every 6 days. It's more the rest recovery side of things, so that it is an advantage, I suppose, for the professional side of it, but just get on with it, Damien.
But when you think of someone like Leo Cullen, Damien, he has now, I know Leinster have a huge squad, but he hasn't seen the bulk of his squad basically since the end of October, and now they're expected to hit the ground running in the Champions Cup this weekend. I think where we will sort of see the rest rotation is probably going to be the Christmas Interpros, unfortunately, because it's not sustainable to ask these guys to keep going week on week.
And ultimately, I was going to say Andy Farrell, but it'll be Simon Easterby. Simon Easterby wants those lads bouncing into presumably another Portugal training camp early in January. Fresh.
It's coming in with the soccer too. You hear them giving out. The soccer players have been flogged. I made the point about Man City, and people now are obviously focusing on the run of form, but they've played more games than anyone since 21-22, 198 games. And then you're expecting these fellas to produce the top level form week in, week out. Not even week in, week out. Every 3-4 days.
A few of the big names have come out and said it as well. Was it Rodri?
Was it a major tournament? You're bouncing from major tournament into.
But part of the problem there is there's a complete divide between FIFA and UEFA, and there's no joined up thinking between particularly those two entities which supply the vast amount of the best players in the world.
Yeah, because FIFA obviously have their corner with the World Cup and the major tournaments.
And the club championship now being expanded.
And then you have UEFA obviously with the Champions League is their kind of big one. So it is, something needs to be done about it because you can't keep asking them no more in any sport really.
But is it time for the players? And you know, FIFA Pro, the players union, have done great work to talk about, to highlight this as an issue. But like, it's time for a decisive action if they feel that strongly on it.
Yeah, I think Courtois was the most vocal I've seen. He's a goalkeeper, but he was very vocal, I remember, last year towards the end of the season regarding these issues. Yeah, I'm not sure, Damien, how you fix it, because people will point to the salaries and the money and all that kind of side of things, and they'll come across as whingers. But it's a genuine concern. You can't just keep playing every 3 days at elite level football. Like, you look at the intensity of that match yesterday, Liverpool-Man City, and they're playing like that every 3-4 days. Now, I know people say they'll get the best rest, the best recovery, all that kind of stuff in terms of the resources that they'll have for the 3 or 4 days in between. But you're just going and going and going.
The one that always gets me with the rugby players, though, is the playbooks. And you hear, you know, different line-out calls, different plays, particularly when Joe Smith was the Irish head coach, and the complexity of some of what he demanded of the players. That you're like, if you're of a certain age, you'll get this analogy. It's like Wurzel Gummidge. You take your Ireland head off on Saturday and you put your Leinster, Munster, Connacht, Ulster head back on Monday and completely reinvent everything you know about tactics and playbooks.
Yeah, I think the playing styles would be definitely more similar now, particularly like with Mike Prendergast coming into Munster in terms of how they're looking to attack. But I think one of the big benefits of the Irish system is that the IRFU are contracted players. That means they have control over them in terms of their game time, like that. It doesn't work like that in France and England, where players, I think, get flogged much more.
I want to get your weekend highlights in a moment, but before I do, we want to celebrate the launch of Kellogg's Christmas GAA quiz, which is in the RTE Christmas Guide. Kellogg's are inviting listeners to the programme the chance to win €400 every day this week.
Wow.
It's not bad now. What are we?
Every day.
23 days out from Christmas. So you can get the Christmas RTE guide, which is out on the 9th of December, and test your GAA knowledge over Christmas with unbelievable prizes to be won, including an all-inclusive trip to New York City, no less. So to be in with your chance to win €400 between now and 7 o'clock, so 49 minutes time, answer the following question. Which hurling county has won the most All-Ireland Senior Championships? So which county has won the most All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championships? Text your answer, your name and your email address to 51552, and before the end of the programme we'll pick one correct entry randomly and give them that €400, all thanks to Kellogg's. As always, RTE competition terms and conditions apply, and you can see 2fm.ie for more. So which hurling county has won the most All-Ireland Senior Championships? Your answer, your name and your email address to 51552, and €400 up for grabs this side of 7 o'clock, thank you to our friends in Kellogg's. I won't ask you to hazard a guess.
Yeah. I know.
You know?
I know, yeah.
Definitively.
I would think I know that, yeah.
Okay, we'll wait and see. Your weekend highlights, Cian, I'll start with yourself.
I went for one at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday, Damien. Hard to pick one from the match itself. I know we're going to get stuck into it a bit later. But I went for Cian Healy becoming Ireland's most capped player. Unbelievable achievement.
You go for the wholesome stuff every week, Cian.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to counterbalance you because you sometimes bring the mood down.
Cian!
And you're the worst thing is...
Hold on a minute. Relax a second. Bring the mood down. That's a hell of an accusation.
This isn't like WWF stuff where we've it all worked out beforehand. You know, like, let's just lob this grenade.
He'll be in the headlock in a minute.
Let the man... I look forward to seeing you suplex him through a window. Let the man finish his point.
Maybe I am a too much of a softy, you're right. But I just thought, I think a lot of people were expecting Cian Healy to be the first one to lead Ireland out. But as it turned out, he was the last one out of the dressing room, and he came out with his two sons, Beau and Russell, which I think was just a lovely touch. He came on and he played his part in Ireland getting the win in the end. And yeah, what an achievement for probably the best prop that's ever played for this country, really.
He was... I interviewed him pitch side. I know you spoke to him as well for the newspapers, which was embargoed until today. Like, the most reluctant... Yeah. Interviewee, like, he just hates the attention, he hates the headlines, and I kind of like the fact that he's very honest about it. Actually quite affects him in terms of his weekly preparation, that he's had to come to terms with you know, the focus and the intrusion and everything else.
Yeah, and Andy Farrell made a big deal of it last week, as he does for particular milestones, whether it's a debut, whether it's, you know, 100 cap or whatever. He tends to focus a lot of the motivation of the week around that. So yeah, you can imagine Keane Healy probably hated it. I'd say he's delighted now that he has the record. I'd say he wants to blend back into the background, but he was telling us, I'm sure it was the same for you, Damien, he's not finished yet either. Yeah. So I think we'll see him again in the Six Nations.
I thought it was interesting, he took down to the in-goal area on the Lansdowne Road end within the first couple of minutes of the game on his own, and I was wondering, was this his way of refocusing? He kind of fobbed it off when I asked him about it after the game.
I'm glad you asked him. He has been doing that all month when he's been in the squad.
Oh, I haven't noticed it.
Yeah, he has. And I think it's because, and Al, you might have an opinion on this, like, he's a 37-year-old who's trying, I think, to stay as limber as he can, you know, in case he gets called on. Because I think it might be easier for a younger lad to come into the action if he needs straight away. So if you watch him behind a goal, if you're at a match, you'll constantly see him stretching. So that's my theory. I haven't...
But the excuse he gave me was, well, there's a little bit of that. But the other thing is, by the time you get 3 anthems, yeah, and if you have a Haka or Fiji, you know, their the celebration president in advance, if the president is there, you could be talking 14 or 15 minutes between walking out, and you'd have to wonder how relevant your warm-up is when you've had maybe 17, 18 minutes from the time you run back into the dressing room to come back out to play. But that's...
It's a good point. Yeah. I think Healy's also a good hype man, because you can see him behind the goal and he's roaring things at his teammates and stuff, to driving them on. So yeah, that was my highlight. I think it was, like I said, a brilliant achievement for a guy who I think has redefined what it means to be a modern day prop. It's just, the role has gone far beyond just scrummaging. Look what Andrew Porter does as well in terms of just working both sides of the ball. So great day for Keane Healy.
There's a feature now for when the Six Nations rolls around in a couple of weeks' time, the big long gap between the warm up and...
I'll be sure to credit you.
There's something in that, Damien, yeah, because especially the time of year we're playing as well, it's freezing. So if you have warmed up, and that's obviously a 37-year-old, would, I'm sure, is more inclined to seize up quicker than a 20-year-old. So now, there's definitely something in that.
So from the wholesome and the saccharine to the crack killer,
can I just clarify that
it was only last week.
One week, once it was
Sorry,
a low light.
What was your highlight? Or
it was
your
a
low
good
light
low
last
light
week?
Last week. Ed Sheeran
which was very fair, and
it's been a highlight every week.
But he didn't mean any badness. It was just a moment of stupid. Listen, I know he shouldn't be there, but it takes somebody from the production company, as happens on, as someone who's lucky enough to work on things like the Sunday Game and other live sport events. It takes people who are around him to go,
Self awareness on his part. He should understand there's a show going on. This manager has been interviewed, and here he is rocking up, high fiving Jamie Redknapp. Yeah. Poor form from Ed.
I thought Jamie Redknapp was worse than Ed Sheeran.
Well, he's as bad.
Like. Anyway, listen, that's like a lifetime ago.
That was last week.
That's my highlight. Low light.
And I go highlights every week. And this week I have
haven't
good,
rattled now. You haven't.
I have good highlights. that was a poor comment from
this is like
Ian.
This is like he's spending too much time dealing with the likes of Eddie Jones and Warren Gatland, getting all these psychological barbs in advance.
But anyway, the highlights are, I watched and I love watching brilliant athletes
like the hug?
Doing brilliant things.
Okay.
So Saturday evening, Saka. And I love Saka. He was absolutely phenomenal for Arsenal. Putting on a performance, he's only 23 years of age. He's their main man, along with Odegaard. And if they're going to win a league title, I hope to God he stays fit and gets them over the line, because he's absolutely phenomenal. Then I flicked over to the hurling, and Saka-esque Donal Burke for Nafina was absolutely unbelievable, this lad. Such a performance he put in. Brilliant game, but this lad was unreal, Donal Burke, playing for Nafina, plays for Dublin. I think the commentator was saying that he'd missed all of last year as well, injured, and he's bounced back now, and here he is putting in an unbelievable individual performance. Because it's National Hunt season, have to mention a horse, Lossie Mout, yesterday. Incredible performance, beating Tia Hoopoo. It's a pity Ruby's not here to get the lowdown, but I'll ask him about it. I texted him yesterday about it, and it was phenomenal. And the other one, Cole Palmer.
Sorry.
This is the Alan Cawley weekend highlights.
You know, sure, look.
You're spending.
You're not here every Monday.
Well, I was going to say.
Neither is Keane, so I'm nailing the highlights every week.
He spent a ridiculous amount of his weekend in my company
I'm nailing the highlights.
I am nailing them. And Cole Palmer, the best part, bar the goal, did you see his interview?
No.
Cole Palmer's like a lad sitting here having a chat with us, and the interviewer asked him about Chelsea going well. I think they've picked up 11 points in their last 15 or something, and in red hot form, he's in good form, he must be title contenders. And the look he gave him, no mate, he just said, the way he answered it was just like a fella down the pub. And I love Cole Palmer for that.
Who would you like to see win the Premier League this year, looking at the landscape at the table at the moment?
Who would I like? Well, I have huge respect for Liverpool. I tipped Arsenal, so I'd like to see Arsenal win it, but Liverpool are phenomenal.
I don't want to be indulgent. Am I allowed to give a highlight of the weekend?
Yeah.
I thought it was brilliant. We were in studio yesterday, Clara Strandhill,
yes,
Corey Pearce's, which first Sligo team to win a Connacht club title since 1983. I love the underdog stories. And Sarsfields against Ballygunner, yeah, in the Munster Hurling Championship hadn't even won the Cork County Championship. Imokilly won it, but they're a divisional team, so they're not allowed to advance to the championship. People who claim to know an awful lot more about hurling than I do would have thought that match would have been over after the first 10 or 15 minutes, and Sarsfields came back to win it. So you cannot beat an underdog.
And to be fair, the club throws up some stories every year. I know all the folks on the inter-county stuff from the championship season, but when you get to this time of year, you do hear some unbelievable GA stories from the club.
Okay, so we're going to chat rugby. Keane's going to stay with us. We're going to be joined by Stephen Ferris. We're going to hear from, well, depending on how good we are at timekeeping, we might hear from Andy Farrell and we might hear from Hugo Keenan. And after the break, we're going to hear from Katie McCabe as we look ahead to the Republic of Ireland's Euro 2025 playoff final second leg against Wales at the Aviva.
Game on.
Football.
And you're welcome back to the programme. So an extended programme on air tomorrow evening for coverage of the Republic of Ireland against Wales from the Aviva Stadium. The winner, it's tied 1-1 after the first leg last Friday. The winner over the course of those two ties will contest or will compete at the European Championships next summer. So Ireland 1-1 after Friday. It's a very familiar setting for Ireland. Obviously they had the Scottish game in Glasgow to qualify for the World Cup. They had a one-off game against Ukraine a couple of years ago, which was a group game but was effectively a winner took all in terms of advancement to the European Championships. So the Ireland captain, Katie McCabe, on media duty today, chatting about the respect they showed Wales on Friday night and equally the impact that the experience they have of these qualification playoffs can play at the Aviva tomorrow.
I think what it gives us is the experience. Having been in this position before twice, one not having gone our way and the other obviously before the World Cup against Scotland, getting over the line with it. So, yeah, I think it gives us experience and it gives us that kind of common sort of mentality throughout the squad, and people that haven't obviously been in the position as leaders of the group and experienced players, we can kind of share that knowledge and show that vulnerability to younger players to know it's okay to have a few nerves when you're playing in front of 25,000 at home in Dublin in the Aviva Stadium. And yeah, it's good to kind of have those nerves, you know. For us, we're absolutely together from that point of view. We know the magnitude of the game, but we just need to focus on what we can control, which is one, our game plan, our work ethic and how we execute that. And then, as I said, having the support of 25,000 people, which is absolutely, it's going to be incredible tomorrow.
That's Katie McCabe chatting earlier today. Alan, it's such a crucial game, isn't it, in terms of not just advancement to a tournament, but how important it is for Ireland to back up World Cup qualification with another major tournament appearance.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing about it all, Damien, is the fact that you don't want those to become isolated achievements and just qualifying for a tournament here and there. If they're to keep building on the growth of the game, which has been absolutely phenomenal, the rise really, I think it's imperative that they get the victory tomorrow night and, as you say, follow up with another major tournament off the back of the World Cup.
It was cagey in the first half, fairly evenly matched in the second half on Friday. How finely balanced is it?
It's finely balanced, but from what I've seen, Damien, of the first half, I don't think there's anything to fear of this Welsh team. I actually expected a little bit more from Wales, particularly from the off, and I think Ireland handled that really well at the start of the game. You would almost feel like they were there to kind of weather the storm, but the storm never really came and Ireland started the better. They were caught with a sucker punch after 20 minutes, a sloppy goal to concede from Ireland's point of view. But once they kind of regrouped after that, I felt they finished the half stronger as well, got themselves the goal back in the game. The second half turned into more of just a kind of... they almost had to just grind out the result and it was a bit of a dogfight. But I think Eileen will be happy with the performance overall in the sense that she knew there was always going to be the second leg. Bring them back at home advantage now tomorrow. There's 25,000 tickets sold. And I fancy them, I have to say, Damien, I fancy them tomorrow.
What sort of a game would suit Ireland best then tomorrow?
I think from what I've seen, they'd have to go after Wales to really do. They can't let Wales settle over here. If they start like they started the game in Wales, I think, and take the game to them and really go after them, I think they can cause them all sorts of problems. Even looking at the game the other night, there was a lot of space for Katie McCabe out in that wide on the wide left. Also, Heather Payne down the right hand side as well. There were spaces in behind the Welsh defence. I think they need to get Caruso more involved in the game. Julianne Russell worked really, really hard. But I think with the two up top, they can certainly cause Wales lots of problems. And I think Ruaisha Littlejohn, who was brilliant the other night, I think she'll have a big impact again in this game.
When we look at it, Eileen Gleeson spoke fairly openly today about managing the minutes. You look at Niamh Fahey, 114th cap, was it, on Friday night? Had a really difficult game, hadn't played for Liverpool all season. Fully fit squad today. You'd imagine Aoife Mannion could come back in, and she is going to have to probably freshen things up ever so slightly.
Yeah, I definitely think she'll come back in, because Niamh, it was more an indication, as you said, she's all the experience in the world, but the couple of mistakes that she made the other night was more an indication of just the lack of game time, because she's not playing every week at Liverpool, and that was always going to be a problem going into the intensity of this game. So I definitely think she'll change that area up. I don't think she'll change the rest of it up, but just in terms of the length of the game, Damien, that it could go into extra time penalties because they're so closely matched, she'll definitely freshen it up as the game goes on.
It's great though, isn't it? 25,000 people in the... like,
brilliant.
We talked about Fortress Talla versus the expanse of the Aviva, but if you end up with even 20 of those 25,000 turning up, it's going to be such a great occasion.
Yeah, I think it's in the right place, to be fair, when you're selling that amount of tickets, and it'll be a great occasion, as you say. And everybody is going with such optimism as well, because, as I said, the growth of the game has been so good here off the back of the World Cup. So it would be brilliant, Damien, to see them qualify for Switzerland. And as I said, I was a little bit worried going into the game on Friday, because there was kind of a real confidence behind this Welsh team, and everything I was hearing coming out of the Welsh camp, that they were very confident as well. And to be fair, there's a lot of good things happening in Welsh football at the moment, but I thought the girls handled them really well on Friday night, and I fully expect them to get the job done tomorrow.
But it's such positivity again around female sport. Like, you look at, you know, the prospect of the Irish women's rugby team at the World Cup next year, the positivity that they had over the course of 2024. Like, these groundswells of support, it's taken a long time, but it's like, I really cannot wait to go tomorrow night as a fan. I'm bringing my daughter and her best mate, and I'm looking forward to it as much as I would any other sporting event, because it's going to be raucous.
Absolutely. And I think that's where we need to get to, certainly with the women's sport. Well, no matter whether it's rugby, soccer, GA, whatever the case may be, that you're normalising these things, and they are becoming just normal events. And I think that's what the girls have done, certainly on the soccer end of things. So it will be a brilliant occasion. It would be great for them to get the job done. I think with their experience as well, I wouldn't have much fear that they might be overawed by the occasion. I think they're well used to that big day now, Damien, in the Aviva as well. A lot of them still, the nucleus of the squad, were all over at the World Cup as well. So I wouldn't be concerned about that. So I do fancy them. I'm confident tomorrow night.
Okay, the weekend's games. Obviously, Liverpool's victory over Manchester City, the big game of the weekend. Liverpool 9 points clear, City 11 points back in fifth place. December 2nd, 2024, 13 games of a 38 season played. Are you going to definitively call it now and rule Man City out of the title race?
100%. 100%. They're gone. They won't win the league.
Okay.
I don't mean they're gone as in they're finished, but they won't win the league, not a hope.
Four league defeats and a bounce. And what is notable yesterday is Guardiola is obviously quite emotive over the whole thing, and you would wonder, does it need more composure to turn it around potentially?
Yeah, and he's obviously a very intense character, but he's not a great loser as well, Damien. I think he's a very bad loser, to be honest with you.
And that's what good sportsman is.
Yeah, but there's a way to lose and a bit of dignity. He shows zero. He's actually very passive aggressive towards the interviewers and all after the match, putting the six fingers up to the fans and all. He doesn't need to do that. If a manager of his stature, like, that should be water off a duck's back, everything that he's achieved. He shouldn't really have to point that out. Like, there was only the Liverpool fans singing a song. It wasn't like they were abusing him, you know.
So, but maybe that drive is crucial to his brilliance.
Oh no, well, the drive has always been there. No, like, no one's ever doubted that, and that's why he is so good and so brilliant, and he's been phenomenal. But because he's achieved so much, and here he is going through the first tricky spell of his career, handle it a little bit better. I think.
So how do you turn it around?
I think we're looking at it. What surprised me more than anything, and on the football end of things, he went into the game yesterday against probably the most dynamic team we've seen. Well, Liverpool have always been dynamic, but this Liverpool team is so dynamic, so powerful, particularly in that centre midfield area. And he played the same team, more or less, as what he played against Spurs last week. And I made the point here last Monday that they were bullied off the pitch by Spurs, particularly in that midfield area of Bissouma, Pape Sarr, and it was Maddison played there and Kulusevski. So yesterday you're going in against Liverpool, who are so strong in that area. And I couldn't believe that he played more or less a 4-4-2, had two in there of Gundogan and Bernardo Silva, Rico Lewis to the right to try and give protection to Kyle Walker, who's struggling, and then Nunes to the left. Like, for a manager who was so brilliant and so amazing, and I have the height of respect for Guardiola, surely you come up with something going to Anfield.
We look at Arsenal, 5-2 winners over West Ham, all the goals coming in the first half of the game from in Arsenal. Like, they had them beaten at half time. The importance of Odegaard's return and the partnership of Odegaard and Saka on the pitch together, massive demonstration of that on Saturday.
Absolutely, yeah. Odegaard, since he's come back now, we've had three matches. He's been back, Sporting Lisbon, obviously the game Saturday, and he's been involved in everything. He's so good, and as you say, he's bringing the best out of Saka. The relationship they have is phenomenal, and Saka did go through a little bit of a quiet spell when Odegaard wasn't there, but I love Saka as well. I tipped Arsenal at the start, Damien. I still think they'll be the closest challengers to Liverpool. If you had to say to me to be at the start of the year to be no Man City this year, I would have said they were absolute certs to win the league, Arsenal. But we didn't expect Liverpool to be as good as they've been. So it's a tough challenge to try and claw back a 9-point gap on such a good team. But I do think they're back towards some sort of the form that they were showing in the early part of this season and also last season. So I still give Arsenal a great chance in the title race.
It's 9 points over 25 games. Mm. Like, you know, there's a lot of scope there.
And Liverpool won't maintain the form either.
Equally, Liverpool are more susceptible to the impact of injuries. Do Arsenal have a better squad than Liverpool have? If you lose Salah, if you lose Van Dijk,
yeah, well, they're two
if
huge.
If you lose Gravenberch in this new position,
well, the example is the two of the players that you point out to, and we've already seen it with Man City losing Rodri, so that's the equivalent of Liverpool losing Van Dijk or Salah. The same with Odegaard when he wasn't there for Arsenal. So even though they're not one man teams, they're absolutely so instrumental in everything that those teams do. So if they were to lose one of them, potentially, I don't think Liverpool are going to maintain the form. As I said, they will hit a blip at some point, but they've been absolutely phenomenal. This manager as well. And talking about a bit of humility and dignity, how well has Slot played everything? He's come in under the shadow of Jurgen Klopp, who's probably the most eccentric manager we've ever seen in the Premier League, and he's just waltzed in Arne Slot, so calm, so collected in everything that he does, and has just taken to it like a duck to water. And he's not roaring and shouting about I'm the great man and I'm doing this and I'm doing that and an egomaniac like you see with a lot of them. He's absolutely brilliant, Slot.
Just one or two of the other things over the weekend, like heavy defeat for Aston Villa. They've now without a win in five games in the league, dropped to 12th place after the heights of last season and what's going on with the Champions League. What else stood out for you across the weekend?
Well, that's a good one with Villa, but to be fair, they're having the same problems what Newcastle had last year, Damien, and they just can't cope with the Champions League element and then obviously the league side of it as well. But Emery's a brilliant manager. What else stood out? Man United, to be fair, 4-0 was a good win, good victory. Not at their brilliant best, and Everton were probably the better team up until the first goal. But to score four goals, he's only in the door, as I said. I think he's done very well since he's come in. Played Xerxes actually as the main focal point, and he was very, very good in the setup that Amorim wants. Almost like that, he was dropping into the 10 position, as they call it now, and holding the ball up and allowing runners in behind him. So I think he did very well, Xerxes. So that was a good win for United. It moves them up to ninth.
My opus of footballing knowledge in my ear is pointing out that it was only Everton.
Oh yeah, well look, Everton never scored in November.
Wow, that is a stat and a half.
Haven't scored a goal in the whole month of November, four games now.
They've only scored 10 goals in 13 games.
They're struggling, Everton. And I like Dyche, but if you're an Everton fan,
but you're not going to come in here now next Monday, and who have Man United got now coming up this weekend?
Arsenal Wednesday night.
Yeah, you're not going to come in and go, ah, sure, look, they had a great win last week, but it was only Everton. No disrespect to Everton.
I'll tell you every week, I think.
Everton only have 12 players contracted for next season.
Everton?
Yeah. If they get sucked back into that relegation, like, I'd worry long term for what is a fantastic football club.
Yeah, and especially if you're a supporter there going into a new stadium and you're going every week and watching a team that can't score a goal. As much as I like Sean Dyche, but come on.
Before I let you go, FAI released details today. 4.2 million viewers watched League of Ireland games across 2024. 70% rise in the Women's Premier Division audience. 29 games shown across RTE and Virgin Media. Average peak of 115,246, rising from 81,922. You could make the argument that more bigger games on television will draw in a bigger audience, which in turn will increase the average, but again, it's another green shoot of recovery or green shoot of growth for the League of Ireland.
Yeah, and Cian, I'm not bringing down the tone on any of the those games. Look at the audience figures. Come on.
Is that the right to reply?
I'm not saying anything. I'm here in the background.
Yeah. But no,
see,
that's
the way he doesn't interrupt you when you're doing your...
It's another positive.
You'll be in here now talking about scrum plays and line-out start
well,
platforms.
Funny, I actually want to ask a rugby question, can I? To yourself.
Wait till we're finished. Wait till we're finished.
But just on that one about the figures, yeah, absolutely brilliant, Damien. And as you say, it's coming off the back of all the positive stories, and let them keep going. For years and years it was negativity, so let the positivity flow, and it's brilliant.
Now, your rugby question to finish.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier about playbooks, and we were with Bernard obviously yesterday as well, and it actually, I didn't interrupt, I listened, right? But it actually struck me, and I went home thinking about it, and then tonight you've mentioned it as well about playbooks, and that Ireland had 24 lineouts and they ran out of ideas, you said.
And Bernard, they ran out of pre-planned moves.
So can you? So my question, so because Bernard said it's like taking a corner kick. So obviously in football you have a corner kick and you have a couple of routines. Mm. It's very prominent now with set piece coaches and all that kind of stuff that probably that we never had. But in the rugby end of it, can you not do a play that you did earlier on? Can you not repeat one that you did earlier?
Of course you can, but the problem was that Joe Smith was the opposition head coach and he had just picked apart.
But if you have one already set up that obviously they don't know about, how is he going to know you're going to do that one again?
Because he'd know by the calls if you can intercept
it's
the calls.
It's all calls, is it?
Well, it's calls, yeah.
Or is there eye contact or body language?
No, you'll often see it's usually the loose head prop. So Andrew Porter or Keane Healy, the pack will have a little mini briefing and then the prop will go over to the hooker and let him know the call.
Yeah.
So 24 lineouts is unheard of. I'm sure you had the same chat yesterday in rugby. So it was Joe McCarthy who came out and told us it afterwards that because they had so many, they had ran out of plays and Australia had picked off so many of them that I think they just got in each other's heads, and with Joe Schmidt.
I thought it was a good question.
But it's like, do you remember you used to watch The Bill as a kid on television? If your parents were watching it, and it'd be like Romeo Foxtrot Tango. And like, it's not far off that they have. Calls.
What I didn't realize, and excuse my ignorance with rugby, but I didn't realize that they call something, and that's what they do. Like,
yeah.
So it's like a fella taking a throw going, I'm going to throw it over to you, Damien.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there'd be, obviously, it's code. Like, it's code. Like, there was a story.
Well, Schmidt knows all them. Can they not come up with new codes?
No, there's new language used, but it's, you know, you only have a certain amount of jumpers in the line-out, usually three, maybe four. So there are only certain guys that the ball possibly goes to. That's if you're calling a full line-out. You could have a shortened line-out. Like, there was a story a few years ago when Ireland played South Africa in a November International that Paul O'Connell was learning Afrikaans
to
know the calls because they were speaking in their native tongue.
There's a documentary. Laura Lee might know this because she's our NFL head. There's a documentary doing the rounds at the minute. Is it The Sign Stealer? It's a guy. So a couple of years, I'd say maybe when we used to be on Radio 1, so probably 10 years ago, I remember interviewing a former CIA operative who'd retired and his job was to try and decode the NFL plays.
Really?
So he was sitting in the stand opposite the coaches. No, this guy was doing this donkey's year. The documentary's about Michigan, is it? Michigan football. Laura Lee is...
Laura Lee's on the ball as always.
Laura Lee's on so many balls, she's like messy. That could have gone really bad. So you start an analogy, you don't know where to go next. We interviewed this CIA operative and he had retired from the CIA and his entire professional career was decoding the NFL
and
plays.
And was he successful?
Yeah. He was making a killing and he would sit in the stand opposite the coaches and he reckoned within the first couple of minutes of a quarter he could have it all deciphered. And like, it's not quite at that level in rugby, but a lot of it is predetermined plays.
Yeah, what amazes me,
I'm over on time. Go on, finish your point.
That's what amazed me just when I was thinking about it last night. I was thinking that they ran out of ideas. Surely, like, they can come up or even just play the ones you did earlier on.
But there'd be calls in open play as well, just to add that. Like, if they're running moves and stuff, there's different language for different plays. That's what rugby is.
If you watch it carefully, like, you will have, say, the scrum half or the out half, and you'll see them shouting across the line. We're going to go Collie Tango 14.
But that's what I'm saying. If Joe Schmidt is on the ball with them, come up with Foxtrot 27.
There were two, I'm going to finish on this. You've probably better examples than me. There were two great stories. One about a player who got called into Ireland camp under Joe Schmidt and got the head torn off him because he didn't know what to do on like the sixth phase of play off a certain lineout. He'd only been like a day in training camp. Donald Lenihan tells a brilliant anecdote about like a lineout in the 80s where one of the whatever the calls were, and one of the lads standing in the lineout went, "Oh no, not me again." And in one of the games, which obviously the whole thing fell apart there. So there you go. We need a few former CIA operatives in the rugby world now too.
I thought it was very interesting.
Okay, well listen, thank you very much for your company.
No problem, thanks.
We're going to chat more rugby after the break, stay with us.
Game on. Rugby.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. The conversation over rugby calls has just ended. You're going to be out in the corridor half the evening now trying to, you know, so we'll leave that for another day. So anyway, we've plenty to reflect upon from the weekend. Ireland finishing their Autumn Nations series with victory over Australia at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday evening. Let's get some reaction from within the Irish camp and fullback on the night, Hugo Keenan. Conceding afterwards, it wasn't pretty, but they got the end result in the end.
It was a bit scrappy out there. We know we weren't as accurate as we could be, but it was similar to the New Zealand game, but we learned our lessons. We learned how to win ugly, which I think is the most important thing, especially on a week like this, what it means to be wearing this jersey, what it means to be in a squad with the likes of Keane Healy. So it's a really special week, so it was really important that we got the win and made a bit of history along the way.
Not perfect. Errors and execution at points could have let you down on other days. But what was said at halftime? Because the start of the second half, we really saw, you know, a glimpse of what we know you're capable of.
Exactly. Look, we sort of moved on from the first half. That was the mentality, that we knew we weren't at our best, but we had still were in such a good opportunity to get the win, to put in a performance that we knew we had to go out and come back and get the win, which was so important for the week.
A good November all round.
Yeah, we've been building. It hasn't been perfect, but there's been lots of learnings, a lot of big debuts for young lads, a lot of young lads stepping up, and a lot of growth in the squad. So, it's a lot of positives to take.
That's Hugo Keenan chatting after that game on Saturday evening. Keane's still with me in studio. Stephen Ferris joins us as well. Hiya, Fez.
How's it going, Damien?
Not too bad. Good to talk to you as always. Andy Farrell had challenged the players over the course of the week to try and produce the best performance for the last game as the springboard into 2025. They probably fell a little bit short.
Yeah, they did. I think listening to Hugo Keenan there, he just absolutely nailed it, didn't he? It was just about getting the result and finishing off with a win. It's like the performance wasn't there. It was there in parts, which was frustrating because it just felt like they couldn't get going in the game. And, you know, as a player being there, you're sometimes just scratching your head going, for goodness sake, you know, how can we make this click? And I felt sorry for the likes of Finlay Beelam, who, you know, got caught a couple of times with a few knock-ons. Scrum didn't really go to plan. And, you know, sometimes you do question going, like, am I actually going to catch a ball here today? Like, you know, you're thinking to yourself, as a player, so I've been there and understand the mindset, but they 100% learned how to get it done when things weren't going well, because you know, for large parts of that game you were just thinking that Australia were going to get it, you know, maybe a score ahead and Ireland were going to have no way back, but they kept in touch and they played some good rugby when the replacements come on, who brought huge amount of energy and thankfully were able to get the win that we were all glad to see.
So Stephen, it's 8 weeks Saturday until the England game at the Aviva on the opening weekend of the Guinness Six Nations. How should we assess where Ireland are at off the basis of the 4 weekends of rugby that we've just seen?
I think England will be relishing the opportunity of coming to Dublin in the first weekend and springing a big upset. I think over the last few weeks, what has been really evident is that teams are now starting to figure out our attack and they're able to identify the options a little bit quicker. They're able to move off the dummy runners to get into outside channels and make the tackles and to stifle any of Ireland's really good attack that has cut some teams to shreds over the last couple of seasons. And obviously what comes with that is huge frustration and more importantly little knock-ons and unforced errors, which, you know, a couple of the teams were able to do during the Autumn Nations series. So yeah, I think England will be bringing huge physicality. They played well in their own Autumn Nations series for large parts, but ultimately fell short on too many occasions. So last point there is Steve Borthwick is under huge amount of pressure, and if they came to Dublin and got beat out the gate, I'm sure, you know, that wouldn't go well for the rest of their Six Nations campaign.
Keane, obviously there's going to be an Andy Farrell shaped hole in the Irish coaching team come the Six Nations, Simon Easterby stepping up. Is it hysterical to talk about there being a difficulty there with Ireland reinventing themselves in time?
Yeah, like I think it's a bit of a lull as opposed to a slump after the World Cup. And look, if you were judging the November on results, then you'd have to say it was pretty good. But obviously it goes far beyond that. And my sense going into last weekend was we were always going to judge November as a whole on the performance and the result at the weekend. Now, we got the result, but not quite the performance. Was it 28 handling errors, 20 turnovers conceded? And that's been a theme across the month. So, Stephen, I couldn't agree more with him there. I think Ireland's set piece tack has shown that when the set piece fires, which isn't all the time, the line out is still an ongoing concern. But Andrew Goodman has come in and added a few different ideas off the set piece. But Andy Farrell is the de facto attack coach. He's the one that runs the philosophy. So in terms of trying to come up with, you know, fresh ideas, it's not ideal to be losing him for the next year until the next time we'll see him will be in November. So he does leave a hole, there's no doubt about it.
So obviously Andrew Goodman has come in. Simon Easterby, who looks after defence, becomes the chief bottle washer. Overall, Paul O'Connell stays with the forwards, John Fogarty stays with the scrum. Aside from Jonathan Sexton in this consultant's role that he's been in with, is there the likelihood of that backroom team being beefed up further in advance of the Six Nations?
Well, we did ask Andy Farrell about this on Saturday and he said that absolutely there's scope to do it, but look, it would have to be the right person to come
Felix
in.
Jones.
Yeah, well, I think his contract means he's not available until next July. I think he could join a club all right, but not a team, and there's no way I think the RFU would leave him go, so I don't see that happening. But look, Johnny Sexton's been in there, obviously he's got a full-time job, he's never been a coach before, I think it would be a lot to ask. I think what will probably happen is Andrew Goodman will take over more of the attacking shape structure. It's not like Ireland don't have anyone in there, but it's a time where Ireland are crying out for, I think, fresh ideas. I think Stephen's right. I think other teams have done their homework. I think Joe Schmidt's Australia deserve a lot of credit for making Ireland look so ordinary at times. The template is there to beat Ireland, and it all starts at the breakdown. I thought they did a serious job on Ireland's breakdown, and look, and that denies them the quick rough ball that Ireland crave.
And Stephen, when we reflect, like, it was a bit of a low key end to the Six Nations. This ludicrous situation that we were only celebrating a championship rather than celebrating a potential Grand Slam, that, you know, people might forget we will go into the Six Nations as defending champions. And have Ireland come back to the pack a little bit more than a situation where one of the other Six Nations teams is really coming and, you know, carving a march through the Autumn Nations series?
I think so, Damien, yeah. I think we've all been blessed, haven't we, over the last couple of years of just the heights that this Irish rugby team has gotten to, and the highs that they've given us as well in big games, the trophies that they've won. Well, granted, they didn't perform like they probably knew they could in the Rugby World Cup, but take that aside, like, we've had some unbelievable days, and I believe there are a lot more to come. Just at this moment in time, they are struggling a little bit just to get going. And it's really, really difficult to go, okay, this is exactly why it's not happening on the pitch. I think there's three or four different things that are going on. The line out certainly is one of them, that it just doesn't seem as reliable as it was a couple of seasons ago. There's a couple of lineouts there again at the weekend that we did win, but we're scrappy. So when you look at the stats, they're maybe not as bad as we think that they are. And I know how much work and effort is put in every single day by everyone involved to try and get that right, and no more so than Paul O'Connell to come up with the menu of lineouts that they go with each week. So no doubt the hard work's there. It's just the small details that they need to get ironed out to go into Six Nations. And I think in their attack as well, they need to be able to hold down defenders a little bit longer, and also get themselves over the gain line a bit more, and get that ruck speed up to the level that we know it can be for Gibson Park, because he just didn't look as amazing. Everybody was saying he's, you know, the best nine in the world, or second best maybe behind DuPont, but it just, he sort of, not that he went into his shell, but I don't think the platform was there in front of him for large parts of the Autumn Nations series.
A question for you both, Stephen first. It's natural that we would look at areas that can be improved upon, but what are the positives that we should take from November?
I think the positives are that we ended on a really good win, and I think it's important as well that Ken Healy becoming Irish most cap player, that they were able to do that for him, and that brings a bit of momentum into the Six Nations. Damien, if they had lost that game, I think, you know, it would have been a big struggle to go into that first game against England and just turn the tap on for a really good performance. So for me, that's the positive. 3 out of 4 and finishing on a win.
Keane?
Four debut hints, I think, off the top of my head. Sam Prendergast, Cormac Isichuku, Thomas Clarkson, and
Gus McCarthy.
Yeah, and I think Gus McCarthy has been a real success story. I thought he was excellent again off the bench at the weekend. Sam Prendergast got valuable game time. Caelan Doris had, I thought, a decent spell as captain. You know, it's all very new to him as well. And look, I can't believe we've gotten this far into the conversation without mentioning the 10 debate. And I think that is a massive positive for Irish rugby now that you have three guys battling out for coming to Six Nations.
And Prendergast got his goal at the weekend and, you know, did well. And Andy Farrell has probably orchestrated a situation where he has put doubts in the minds of Crowley and Frawley, who were there in advance of that, that, listen, none of this is decided upon.
Yeah, and I think Stephen made a good point earlier that the bench were excellent at the weekend, and I think the pick of the bunch were Craig Casey and Jack Crowley when they both came on. I thought they brought huge energy. They asked different questions of the Wallabies' defence, and look, they ended up getting the try in the end from Gus McCarthy. So a lot's going to... We spoke earlier in the show, Damien, that the Champions Cup is back this weekend. Jack Crowley is guaranteed to start the next 2 weeks for Munster, whereas Sam Prendergast is in a battle with Kieran Frawley and the Byrne brothers back in Leinster. So Leo Cullen has a big decision to make this weekend. Does he continue backing Sam Prendergast, or does he go back to Kieran Frawley? So I think a lot can change between now and the Six Nations, but for sure, I think Andy Farrell has given, I think, Simon Easterby scope to go with Sam Prendergast, but I still think Jack Crowley is the man in possession when it comes to it.
So Munster, Stade Francais at Thomond Park, Toulouse host Ulster, Bristol host Leinster this weekend, the Champions Cup. Like, Stephen, give us the players' perspective, or the former players' perspective, on how challenging a turnaround this will be for the guys who are going to have to front up again this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be extremely tough. It's just not the fixture like the Ulster rugby fans want. Off the back of a defeat to Leinster, a weakened Leinster side, albeit they had a number of internationals who really stepped up to the plate, but Ulster were physically dominated for large parts of that game. Again, the set piece is a huge, huge worry, as it has been for the last couple of seasons. And now they have to go away to the reigning European champions and try and salvage something out of a game. So it's going to be very, very difficult. They've got Bordeaux the week after that, so it's going to be extremely tough. And all I'm hoping for is that this Ulster team play with some vigour and play with some intent and hopefully get some type of performance out of the weekend.
Because, Keane, the cliche is nobody's going to win it this weekend, but those first two rounds, Europe will slip away from you very, very quickly if you don't get a footing.
Yeah, I think there's a little more scope because of the way the format is, and they've the round is 16 now. But, I mean, as starts the competition go, I genuinely don't think you could get any tougher. Toulouse are obviously the champions. They're top of the top 14. And Bordeaux, I don't even think you could call them dark horses because they look like serious contenders. They're second in the top 14. So if Ulster were to lose back-to-back games this weekend, they're absolutely up against it. I'm thinking back to Munster last season, did get through with a win and a draw. Ulster obviously ended up in the Challenge Cup last season, but that's not where they want to be. That's where Connacht actually find themselves this season. So it's massive, Jamie, to get a good start. And yeah, they need to hit the ground running after a busy month.
Stephen, how big a year is it for the Champions Cup? Because it feels each year that the gloss has fallen off it ever so slightly, more so because of this format, which makes it very difficult to see the overall landscape and momentum of the competition.
Yeah, like as a former player, I used to love the back-to-back games, and I was involved in so many crackers, like absolute belters, where Leicester Tigers came to Belfast and, you know, walked away with their tails between their legs, conceding 30 or 40 points. And then you go to Leicester Tigers and you get, the same thing happening to you. You get an absolute drumming. So it's just that rivalry that you sort of build up when the competition is like that. And unfortunately, it is there's a few moving parts to it now, which makes it a little bit harder to follow for the general fan, I believe. But, you know, hopefully we'll have a cracking Champions Cup over the next couple of weeks and we can all start talking about it a little bit more positively. Yeah.
Stephen, thanks so much for being with us as always. Stephen Ferris with us there, and Keane Tracy of the Irish Independent, who's been in studio with us for the hour. Thank you very much, Keane.
Thank you, David.
We'll chat to you soon. A big thanks to everyone who texted in Kilkenny as the hurling county that had won the most All-Ireland Senior Hurling Championship. So we've picked one correct entry randomly, and that person is going to get themselves plus €400, all thanks to Kellogg. So congratulations to Miriam Bambrick. You are tonight's winner. So congratulations, Miriam. And if you missed out today, don't worry, because we will be doing this competition all over again tomorrow. And a reminder, the Christmas RTE guide is out on December 9th. And with the Kellogg's Christmas GA quiz, you can test your GA knowledge over Christmas with unbelievable prizes to be won, including that all-inclusive trip to New York. So another €400 up for grabs tomorrow night, courtesy of Kellogg's. A word of thanks, as always, to our broadcast coordinator, Laura Lee Davies, the programme produced by Ronan Lawler, from Damien O'Mara, all of us here till we chat again. Good night. RTE 2FM.